Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And for the second hour of today's show, I've got a really interesting discussion lined up for you. I want to talk about the way in which we use the internet. I want to reflect on kind of the last 20 years or so of human history. I want to kind of mentally go back in time and think about it again. Think about what we started off with the internet. Think about what we've got now. And the aim of this is to try to understand where we've gone right and where we've gone wrong. Because I think that a lot of things have gone really well, and we've developed some amazing capabilities, and some great tools have been created through human industry for actually extending what we can do with the massive networking capability that is the internet. But then we've fallen into some traps, and those traps have been created by corporatism and by government interference, and have led to a kind of a scenario where we're being caught in honey traps. These honey traps are represented by monolithic pieces of software which have been deployed on the internet by very, very large companies, and often given to us for free. And in some ways, they've enhanced our lives and been really, really useful and great. But in other ways, they've channeled us into one direction. They've herded us in one direction, and they've given the powers that be an opportunity to interfere and snoop and actually control what we do, which is the exact opposite of what the freedom of the internet is really all about. It's kind of an irony. It's a bit of a paradox. And I want to explore all of that, and I'm going to do so with the help of my great friend, Josh Jackson, who now joins us from his studios in Berlin, Germany. Josh, welcome to the show.
G'day, Harold. How are you? And g'day, Liz.
Good day indeed. So, Josh, what do you make of my introduction there?
Yeah, I mean, I love looking back in the history of the internet. I think it's I really find that the internet is, you know, it is one of the most wonderful and necessary tools to the common good, to the common man and woman, to be politically correct.
Indeed.
You know, it really is such an amazing invention, if you will. It's so grand. There's no way. I mean, could you imagine in the 60s being able to say to someone, oh, you know what, in the future you can call anywhere in the world for free and see someone else while they're talking to you, and have group conferences, no need to fly anywhere, to be able to share information like a book or an audio piece of audio in an instant, get a new album in an instant, you know, and for free. I mean, the grandness of information. You know, I heard somewhere that the people are on average soaking in more information than people in the 50s would in a whole year. They would soak in a day now, because when the general surfer looks, he's literally, or she's literally, just surfing link after link. And then, you know, we all know it. We go researching something, and then 2 hours later, we're in some strange part of the web, soaking in some random information which we just would never have really. You know, you would have had to go to some university research facility.
You would have had to traverse the libraries of the world. You would have had to physically go from library to library to find the information that is now instantly available, including, you know, audio, visual, and books.
And if you did, I mean, if you did go to a library, you sort of, you pick out a subject and you're kind of stuck on that subject because the book isn't hyperlinked. So, you know, you read the whole book and then you sort of look around the library, what else interests me. So it changes the dynamic of learning and of just information. Finding.
And really, really good point there. And, you know, one of the most important aspects of this revolution, of course, you know, it happened in stages like all revolutions do, but the I guess the key transformative point of that revolution was not the creation of the internet itself, which actually happened long before. It was the creation of this layer of the internet called the World Wide Web. And that is what most people associate with the internet. In a lot of people's minds, web and internet are the same thing. They're not. The internet is an underlying network, and the internet has been around since the 70s. But until the late 1980s, early 1990s, the internet was really just a network for communication between government institutions and universities, initially a defense.
The word internet only came in 1982.
Right, it only began to be used as that term in 1982. That's interesting. And the World Wide Web was actually invented in 1989, and it didn't become known until about 1994. It was a subterranean thing that developed for a few years, and then kind of exploded into popular awareness in between 1994 and 1995. But continue.
Let's go right back to where we started, and that's just between a research project agency called ARPA, basically went online, in quotes, because there was no such thing before, in 1969, December, and connected four major universities together. And that was the first network.
Right, right.
It was designed for, education and government organizations to sort of communicate together. But it was thought about, how do we stop a military attack destroying any communications systems?
And the power of that decentralized structure, the flexibility of that was what made it so enduring.
Yeah, and this is why sometimes I think some of these things like DARPA and NSA, they sometimes create things that are actually good for the common people. inadvertently, because NSA brought us things like Tor,
Of course, World War II brought us a huge range of technologies and improvements and things that didn't exist before. And I've often reflected on that. It's like this horrific war that killed 100 million people actually then spawned all these incredible developments. Certainly the military... I don't know. We could spend a whole hour kind of reflecting on that, or whether that's good or bad, or what the heck is going on in terms of human cultural, evolution. But it is bizarre, isn't it?
Well, yeah. What it does is it forces people to be as in to really create and be. As creative as possible, because if you aren't, your whole family dies. So as a society, you can see it. The Aboriginal cultures in Australia generally were very quite peaceful in terms of warring. They didn't really have much outside threats. There was probably inner threats, but generally outside threats there weren't. Whereas you look at the Maori culture, there were a lot more war-y within the island. But you see that that generally, if you have a look in Western civilization over in Europe. It was just constant war. It was constantly people invading you. So you really had to sort your crap out. But by the time, we're here in countries in the West, or in the East as well. Other parts of the world which had a lot of war, creating piano concertos and all sorts of stuff. you know, back in Australia, they really were still tribal. And so and that's not to say it's a bad thing. It was just a different fork of human.
Of course, that argument was often used to prove the superiority of the Western civilization, and particularly the British Empire. I mean, that actually was used to prove superiority. I think these days.
But it's nothing about superiority. I mean, it's simply a different fork of. I mean, you know, it's definitely superiority in a military way. I mean, you know, they won, but in a spiritual or an understanding of people or a lifestyle, I don't see how it's any superior. I mean, you know, you can't compare nowadays because they've been absolutely destroyed, the Aboriginal culture. So, but back then, you know, there was quite sophisticated. It's just that white settlers didn't really understand it at all.
Indeed.
And didn't wish to understand it either.
But anyway, we digress, and it's very easy to do. Let me just turn back to this question about the internet and the World Wide Web, because when you started off your little description there, your little history, you were reflecting on the power that we now have to get information on virtually any topic, virtually instantaneously, and that is largely through the World Wide Web. And what is the World Wide Web? Well, it is actually just a way of people communicating. It actually is. It all started with this amazing language, this what they call a markup language called HTML, which is just like a machine language, which allows information to be put on a computer in a meaningful, organized, visually appealing way to be shared between one person and another person. And it's incredibly simple, actually. It's incredibly elegant in that sense, which I think is its power, because when this markup language was released to the general public, it was easy enough for just about anyone to create their own web page. And that's what made the internet explode. And that's what, when we come back from the break, I really want to get into the psychology of that so we can really understand it. It was a genius creation, right? It was the ability to have, we had this network, we had already the ability to communicate, but HTML came along and was just simply a way of people being able to put a page up that someone else could read, and it could be done quickly and easily, and you didn't have to have a degree in computer science to do it.
Yeah,
and that's why the internet exploded, because you got people voluntarily, without any remuneration. They weren't doing it for money. They were doing it for interest, for the love of it, for the passion of it. They started creating websites. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to get right into that in more depth. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back with Truth News Radio. I'm talking today to Josh Jackson, and we're talking about the big picture. We're talking about the internet as a whole. We're talking about the World Wide Web, what it really means, where it's headed, where it's come from, what the strengths and failings are of the technology that has been created, which we are all using today. Now, Josh, you of course are a bit of a geek. You know, you love your gadgets and you love software, don't you? I mean, you're
big fan.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but you're also a thinking man, and you've got perspective. But I know that you like to dabble in a lot of new things that come out and try them out, and you're really into it. That's why I wanted to have this conversation with you today, because I know that that these are things that you've actually got a lot of fresh insights on. And so, what's your comment on what I was saying there at the end of the last segment, talking about this? The internet was founded on the pioneering spirit of these people who just went out and built websites, and that's what made the internet great. And I'm thinking about what the internet has become now, and I'm thinking, well, it's still great, of course, and it's gone on to be greater and greater in many ways. But we mustn't lose that. It's really important that we don't lose that spirit of individual people just putting together a website. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what really has happened is that firstly, we had people creating websites. HTML, they figured out how to program, and they loved it. They could talk about their cats or their you know, how to string a guitar, or they could talk about anything of their interest. But it was quite difficult to do, and there was a huge learning curve, and it was quite you really did need to have a ridiculously slow modem where you had to, take up your telephone line.
Yeah.
And I
think an important thing is that it got harder and harder. Like, it started off being pretty easy, but the specification of HTML got more complicated. And the things that people started doing with HTML became much more complicated very, very quickly. But yeah, anyway, please continue.
Yeah. But it was quite amazing the amount of, the amount of innovation at that time was huge. I mean, we had HTML and we had VRML, which was a virtual reality markup language, which developed by SGI, Silicon Graphics Network Computing, and they basically created a 3D internet where that was hyperlinkable and everything, but it just didn't take off because it was way ahead of its curve. But HTML allowed people to write these basically create a magazine, content for people to read about any subject. So it was amazing, but it was very difficult too. Then we had GeoCities pop up. It was a way for people to graphically. It was kind of the first Web 2.0. It was a way for the common person to jump online and actually make a website what interests them without having to do any coding, and it was then an explosion. I mean, but it was the first centralization,
right,
of people's interests, and this is what happens, is that to basically become easier, which has a two-edged. Which is a very sharp two-edged knife, because when you make something easier, you generally centralize it. It brings more people and more diversification on board, which is fantastic. But at the same time, it brings less diversification in who's storing all this information and who has control of it and who gets to censor. Then what happens is later on, blogs come along, and this was the first time where PHP, which is a server-side.
Actually, can I just interject? I want you to continue with that thread, but I want to actually just fill in some of the middle parts there, because you jumped to blogs. But I want to basically cover a couple of other aspects which were really big at the beginning of the World Wide Web. In fact, some of which actually a little bit precede the World Wide Web. One is what they called bulletin board systems, which were known as BBSs, and the other was of course online chat. Now, online chat was huge before the web, right? It was just a command line interface, right? And there were people doing that all over the world, and they were having an amazing time. You know, it was a social experience.
It still runs a massive portion of the internet.
It does.
IRC. Which is a very low-level protocol.
Yeah, yeah, and you can still just do it.
Whole Bitcoin network is run on IRC.
Wow, that's fascinating, isn't it? So these technologies existed, continue to exist, and of course have, you know, they've continued in their own little path. There's a lot of people who are still on IRC. You know, now of course bulletin boards evolved into what then became called forums. When it became a web thing, the terminology started to change, and they were started to be called forums. And of course, forums were huge and still are. But there was sort of a heyday of forums, wasn't there? There was like a time when forums were everything, but then other forms of communication came along. Although the forums are still there, and there are many, and they're very important in certain areas, you wouldn't think, oh, I'll start a forum these days. You don't think, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to start a forum just to talk about something. You don't do that anymore. Because blogs came along, and blogs came along around about the early noughties. I'll let you continue from there. I just wanted to fill in some of those gaps.
Yeah, and very important gaps that I jumped over there. But forums still reigned supreme until basically social networking. But blogs were a way to take over from websites, because it was the first time you could install software on a server which allowed you to basically keep a diary, but also then blogging software, like blogging companies that allowed you, like Blogger.com, which was later bought out by Google, allowed you to basically go in and instantly have this great-looking site with a lot of functionality that was written by the crowd on the internet, more enthusiasts. Which you could just basically plonk onto your website and it would work. And you could keep this running dialogue, which people could then subscribe to and keep up with. But the problem was, again, you had more and more consolidation, especially as companies like Google and Yahoo and Microsoft start snacking on I've got a little bit of a runny nose with all this hay fever.
No worries.
As companies like the big three start snacking on these little upstarts, the startups, which is great for the startup because, wow, we just got bought out by Google.
Yeah, they did great out of it. They got a whole lump of money, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you start to have this consolidation of where all this data is stored. And I don't think it's that bad a thing. The problem is that I'll tell you why it's not that bad a thing, because anyone can still create a startup and join in and try to take them on.
Yeah, and it's none of these things are actually bad in themselves, especially in the early phases. It's all good, but badness starts to develop, and we're going to get into the badness very soon when we come back from this break. Stay with us.
Get the fruit, but why once living high another grievance?
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. We're talking about technology, specifically the internet. We're talking about the good and the bad and the ugly. And, you know, we're kind of still in the good, but we're starting to now get into questions about what might be not so good. Now, Josh, you were sort of describing there how some of these amazing little startup creations were gobbled up by big players. And of course, we need to include email in that because, of course, Hotmail was one of the first of those that was gobbled up by Microsoft, and you know, Webmail, as it was called, was another tremendous tool. And I should have mentioned that earlier when I was talking about sort of the interim phases of all this. Of course, Webmail was another very important new kind of stage in the power of using the internet, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was brought in. It was introduced by Ray Tomlinson from 1972. So it's been around for a long, long time.
Oh, the email protocol. Level. Yes, of course, the email protocol. I was actually talking about webmail, but you're right. Email has been around since the 70s. Of course, email, absolutely intrinsic part of the internet forever. But then webmail, which was using a web page to access your email, you see? That's the beauty of that. All you needed was your web browser. All you needed was your Netscape or, you know, whatever you were using back in those days. You just got onto your web browser. You didn't need to install Eudora or any of these funky applications. Just straight onto the web, put in your password. Hey, and I can check my email. That is so cool.
Yeah, and what's so important about that is that you started collecting really private conversations on other people's servers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because things that is generally put online, it was like you were broadcasting, you knew you were broadcasting, you knew, hey, you know, I'm not going to put anything that jeopardizes my privacy and what I hold sacred to only me and my loved ones. You started communicating to those people on these so-called private servers.
Fascinating, isn't it? But of course, you know, web hosting companies generally had their own webmail solution that was totally independent of the giants. I mean, I belong to this weird class of people, Josh, who has never used one of these centralized webmail solutions. I never used Hotmail, and I've never used Gmail. You probably think I'm weird, but that's just the way I am.
Did you use Rocketmail?
I didn't. For quite a few years, I was working at a university, and I had my own email account at the university, so I just used Eudora, which was the program which everyone used back in those days. And then later on, I started, you know, I can't even remember some stages in that, but for the last many years now, I've just basically used my web hosting company that I use has an email server that I connect to, that I configure either using a desktop like Outlook or using their own webmail client, which is really crappy. You know, it's called Squirrel Mail, actually. you may have seen it. A lot of web hosts provide it for free, and it's you know, it's not that great. But I chose to stay away from Gmail. And, you know, when I discovered that Gmail was basically, that Google was basically reading all your email for the purposes of advertising to you, I really thought, no, I really want to stay away from that now. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know about that until probably about 3 or 4 years ago that they were doing that. And it just cemented in me the idea that I didn't want to be providing them fodder for advertising material by my private emails. Thank you very much.
Well, the thing is that you're still hosting your mails on a server that's hosted by someone, that's owned by someone else. And this is the fundamental problem with email, is that unless you start up a server at your house and then you encrypt all that data, everything is going through a pipeline. But we'll get to that anyway.
Yeah.
The As email became more centralized, you had this really Hotmail and all these companies. And geez, I mean, it is good. I mean, it allowed people to communicate across the globe. People, that you could get your mother or your grandmother who didn't understand squat about technology could get online if you moved overseas for work or across the country, where you could instantly write letters. And of course, this was a huge threat to the postal service and all sorts. But it allowed the common man again to jump online and communicate. And by communicating, it's also a very dangerous thing when it comes to the state. The state doesn't like mass communication, as you can see with the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
Which is basically, people could argue, well, that could happen. Revolutions have happened in the past without communication, of mass communication. But it made it a lot easier and and also allowed the rest of the world to watch and hear from the ground what was going on. Instead
Absolutely.
Of hearing what a centralized news network wanted to let you hear
and about. It allows things to happen far quicker. It's like it's an accelerant, it just accelerates everything. But you mentioned a point before, which I think is really important. I don't want to lose it, which is that a very critical point happened when the big corporates started gobbling up the startups, and this problem is really, really exacerbated with email, because it becomes private information then, which is now being scooped up. When Hotmail became that huge and then was bought by Microsoft, and then it just became so massive, it meant that Microsoft had personal information of millions upon millions of people. And that then becomes a big risk, doesn't it?
Well, definitely. But then you had this softening of people's approach to privacy when Gmail comes out. But Hotmail offers you, 50 meg of data, or whatever it was, I can't remember. You had to delete your emails because, my mailbox is full. All of a sudden, Gmail comes up and offers you a whole gig of data.
Yeah, yeah. It was incredible.
And then 10 gig or something. Oh, it was 10 gig. I don't know. It was huge. It was so above the rest.
Mind-boggling.
It was like a skyscraper to a molehill.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, and it was this whole new approach to email. It was a nice interface. It was clean. But, little caveat.
Yeah, a little catch.
A little robot has to read your email.
It's only
a robot. And it basically picks up keywords and serves you ads on the side. That's how we can offer you 10 gig of data space, and you never have to throw out anything again. I mean, so
it's really seductive and devious, isn't it? I mean,
it's still voluntary, no
it's
one's
voluntary
to
in the sense
it,
that well yeah I mean you know it's voluntary for you to use the roads, you can get in your car and you don't have to use the road if you don't want to, but you're going to have trouble driving anywhere. But anyway, sorry, continue. As I've demonstrated, there are, but most people can't get their head around it. Most people find it's too hard, but anyway continue.
So this is again a psychological blow to privacy.
Yeah.
In the fact that, no human sits there, and no human could possibly sit there reading emails and then selling ad space to, It's all there, but it was a little like, it's a bit creepy, but okay. And the same thing will happen when Facebook started tagging pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a little creepy. But Google tried to have a web bot, which it can do, I mean, and it probably does, that crawls the web. And
we're just going to break, Josh. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Do stay with us. Interesting discussion here on the internet and the good and the bad and the scary. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. And I've really been enjoying this discussion we're having about technology and the internet. It's gone so quick. Josh, I think we're going to have to continue this discussion and move through all the different phases and stages of things we want to talk about here, because it's a massive topic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, how much time have we got left?
Well, we're just about run out for today, but I think for future weeks we want to think about extending this discussion and trying to get maybe into some of the more the finer points of yeah. of some of the broad brush things that we've touched on today.
Well, also solutions.
Yes, I think, indeed. You know, we want to get into
a
solutions.
A lot of the time, the truth and justice movement really focuses on a lot of the negative points of everything, and warning, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what's constantly missing is solutions, and there are plenty of solutions that, especially now.
But we sort of, if we can just continue, I want to still focus there on that point we were on there at the end of the last segment, where we're talking about the implications of handing over that amount of private confidential information to a mega corporation.
And being told that a robot's going to read it.
Yeah, and a lot of people probably weren't even aware of that. A lot of people, some people knew, some people didn't. But okay, the point I wanted to make when you were saying all that was that, you know, when the NSA started developing their tools, we've got to understand that what they were doing was probably using similar algorithms to what Google was using in searching through your content for information. It's all just about information, isn't it? And, of course, an interesting point to note is that Google was largely funded by DARPA, and the current CEO of Google was the ex-CEO of DARPA, and another massive government organization connected to the Defense Department. You know, really, the NSA, DARPA and Google, it's like a continuum in many ways, isn't it? I mean, we know there's a revolving door, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, with any of these huge industrial complexes, like, you know, the information industrial complex is quite consolidated.
And, yeah.
And it definitely ties in with security complex and the military complex. But it doesn't have to, and we, you know, the thing is with this whole Snowden case is that I hope it doesn't scare people into you know, saying their mind, saying what's on their mind, and exposing what's unjust. It's really important that people just keep on going, and at the meantime, looking at the new tools that are coming up, which are starting to eat away at these centralized mechanisms. And this is what the beauty of the open source community, because everything that we've talked about has been a honeypot because it's been free. Google's 10 gig is free. Robot reads your email, but it's free.
Yeah.
You can log on anywhere in the world, and all your emails are there. They're on your phone. And it's convenient, and it's free. But there's another free, and that free is set up by thousands of enthusiasts attacking a problem. And those enthusiasts say, we don't want money for this. We like it because it's fun to develop, and we like having an alternative. So GIMP is one for it sounds pretty strange, but it's a Photoshop alternative, and it's been around for years and years and years. It's been developed by thousands of people over the years.
And of course, let's not forget the old shareware too. Shareware was a bit more of an earlier incarnation than open source, but there's still a lot of products that are essentially sold as shareware, even though they're not fully open sourced, the people who've developed them have said, you know, we'd like you to give us money, but guess what? If you don't want to pay us, you can still have it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because somehow there is an economy built around this type of thing. I mean, I use a lot of free software myself. In fact, this very show you're listening to is edited on a shareware type program called Reaper, which I still haven't bought a license for. Oh, God, I'm a naughty boy, aren't I? I mean, I should have by now, you know what I mean? But this is a non-profit show. It's a non-profit show, folks, so far anyway. I've put so much of my own money into this show. I don't feel guilty about not having paid for the audio software that I use. But it's a tremendous program, Reaper. It's a fully professional audio, digital audio production station with all your effects and tracks and everything you could possibly want.
So there was all these incarnations of where, you know, you had freeware, shareware, nagware.
Yeah.
Which basically nagged you every time just to, I don't know, do something for them. And you're right, that was before the open source. And the open source movement was more about online software.
Yeah, and it was really about exposing the full digital code base, the engine.
The Lego block that
would actually allow you to go in and maybe re-engineer that piece of software to do new things, to change it however you want. It wasn't just giving you the product, it was giving you the underlying machinery as well.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very important.
Yeah, that was crucial. That was crucial to the development of Linux, because if Linux had not been open sourced like that, you wouldn't now have the internet. In fact, the internet, we could have spent a whole hour just talking about Linux, couldn't we? Because the open source nature of Linux is what allowed the internet to take off.
It was.
Yeah.
And this is again when people say, "Oh, don't copy. Copying's bad." If it wasn't for copying, we wouldn't have the internet. Because the whole reason. We have, and people say, "Oh, who uses Linux?" The fact is, everyone uses it.
Yeah,
everyone uses it because most servers run it.
And of course, if you own a Mac, you know it's powering your Macintosh. You know, it's there. It's the underlying operating system of the Mac suite of products.
Yeah, it's the base. It's the base, We had a lot of different flavors of Linux. We had Irix, which was on the Silicon Graphics. We had some other one, which was on Sun Microsystems. You have all these different flavors because people can fork, what's called forking the code. So you get the source code, which is this open source, and you make your own version of it. And this is what Herod was talking about earlier, where you could just take the code and change it in some way, but you actually create a whole new product.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what all the variants of
with the original.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you often see products that start out as proprietary products that then become open sourced at a certain point, or some go the other way. For example, Red Hat Linux was actually open source and then went proprietary. But then there was another variant of it, I think, called Fedora, which is still open source. And so there's any number of variations on this way of approaching it. But I guess the really important thing to bear in mind is that what open source does is it potentially it gives power back to the entrepreneurial individual. And remember, when we talk about freedom on this show, when we talk about liberty, one of the most key ingredients of liberty is the freedom of individuals to be able to realize their own potential. And that's what you don't have when you have a monopolized corporatist system like we have now, where all products and services tend to be consolidated into just, you know, one or two players for each major area. You know, they dominate the market and no one else can compete.
Yeah. But you know, all this stuff is breaking down a lot now, and I think they can compete. It's just that And more and more people worry about privacy and just sort of get a bit peeved by Facebook. But it's not only peeved. Like, generally what happens is you get the next generation, and it's already starting to happen. There was a startup that let you do something on your phones. Anyway, they had Facebook log in with Facebook, and it was aimed at the teenage group. And I let you take photos. It was some sort of a photo app, photo sharing app.
Yeah.
Log in with Facebook. Now, nobody used it. And then they kept on getting emails saying, can you just create your own login? Because we don't use Facebook. And they were like, what, really? Okay, well, and they sort of did it as a, oh, okay, we'll put our own login so you can create your own username. Anyway, yeah. As soon as they did, it skyrocketed in How the teenage circles. Why? Because when they interviewed them and asked that question, why?
Yeah.
They said, well, I don't want to be using a social network where all my teachers and my family and my mom and dad are on there, and it's uncool. It's crap. I'm bored of it. I'm bored. And this is what, you know, really drives change, is that, quite frankly, it's the whims of the teenager just going, oh, it's so uncool now. It's so boring. And you know, we've all done it when we were teenagers on certain things. We just rebelled against what the last generation. I mean, you see it with you know, Apple's iPhone. It was dominating the market. Teenagers now, they don't want that. They don't want their old hand down.
Yeah.
You know, every grandma's got an iPhone. Stuff that. I want something individual. And you know, that's why they're going Android.
I really wanted to talk about Facebook in the show. We only just started to touch on it now. We're at the end of the hour. We're going to come back and talk about Facebook in depth. Josh, thanks for coming on this week. It's been great talking
to you. Cheers,
mate. Cheers. Truth News Australia signing off for another week. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then.